Next is past medical history. So for past medical history, the first thing we have is the general state of health. How would you find out about this? Close-ended or open-ended question? I hear an open. Does anyone want to go for closed? No? You guys are not leaders. You guys are followers. All right. So, open is correct. So, give me an example of a question you would ask. We picked on Nicole earlier, so we might want to pick on someone else. Okay, how are you feeling? Tell me how you would rate your health in overall. What you don't want to ask is something like, are you feeling okay? Yes or no? Yeah. Rate your health on a scale of 0 to 5. What does that mean? So what you want to do is not give them choices, but you want to give them some space to talk. And that will help give you some more information. I want to ask about past illnesses. Have they had any diseases or infections in the past? Chronic illnesses. What's the difference between a past illness and a chronic illness? Chronic, they still have it. Past, it's over and done with. Injuries and treatments and any lingering effects. So, say you broke your arm and you still have some stiffness because of it. Or say someone broke their leg and they still have a slight limp. Hospitalizations, including psychiatric, if possible. Surgeries. Now, here's a tough one. The procedure, the date, the hospital, and the surgeon is what we'd like to know. And most people can barely muster up what the actual surgery was. Maybe they can give you the year. But as far as the surgeon and the hospital, it's like, gone. And I know you think, I'll never forget. But 2 or 3 years later, it's like, when did I have that? Was that in the summer or was that over spring break? Who was the name of that doc? Because usually you don't see the surgeon a lot. You see the surgeon once or twice and you're done. So it's not like they're a recurring memory in your head. So it goes away. So the best thing you can do and tell your patients to do is keep a record of these things. So that way they don't have to remember. It's on paper. So how many of you have ever seen Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade? Only one of you has seen the movie? No, it's the third one. The one before this last one. Well, Sean Connery plays Harrison's fourth father, and he loses his little journal, which has the secret information in it. And he's like, why can't you remember the information? He goes, I wrote it down so I wouldn't have to remember. So, write this down so you don't have to remember. Now, you want to ask about any active or current problems, and then any allergies. Now, what did we say an allergy was? In PathoPharm yesterday, we talked about allergic reactions. And we said that allergic reactions involve the... It's an I word. The immune system. All right, so we have two possible definitions of allergies. They're really the same, just different words. One is an inappropriate immune reaction. And the other one is a hypersensitivity reaction. Either way, your immune system is attacking things that it really shouldn't be attacking. Now, we have allergies to environmental things like mold, pollen. We have food allergies. What's the most common food allergy? Peanuts, yay! What else are common food allergies?
Iodine.
Okay, iodine, wheat. Possibly milk, although a lot of what people think is milk allergy is really just lactose intolerance, which is completely different.
Shellfish,
that's through iodine most like usually. Some people are allergic to eggs. Yeah, some people are allergic to citrus. But by far the most common is going to be? Okay, now one of the interesting things about food allergies is they don't always present in the same way. We usually think of food allergies as what happens to Hitch, swell up and get all edematous. But that's not the most common. Only about 10% of people actually have that. So we'll talk about that in PathoPharm when we get to hypersensitivity reactions. And then we have drugs. Now, we're going to talk about drugs in a lot more detail in a few minutes, so keep that in the back of your head. All right, past medical history, your PMH. Want to ask about? Now, past doesn't necessarily only mean in the past. Oh, sorry, this is personal medical history, not past. Personal medical history. Substance use and abuse, smoking and tobacco are the two big ones that are legal in the United States, at least for the time being. Alcohol. When you ask about alcohol, what's the best kind of question to ask? Okay, when's the last time you had a drink is a good way to ask. What's another one? Okay, how frequently do you drink? What is a bad question? Do you drink? If you ask, do you drink, it's very easy. Nope. You're not going to get a good answer. So, better is to assume the person drinks and then ask the person questions that lead you to tell you how much. So, a question that I like to ask is, how much alcohol do you typically drink in a week? Because if you say, how long, you know, when was the last time you had a drink? Well, it might have just been a dry spell. Or if they say a week ago, that doesn't tell you how much they had a week ago. Or if they say, I only drink on the weekends. But when I do, oh yeah. Yeah. So how much alcohol do you drink in a week or in a month is a much better kind of gauge as far as how much alcohol total the person drinks. Now, what is considered binge drinking? But how much? Yeah, so more than four drinks, which would be five, is considered binge drinking. Now, most American teenagers and college students, on the weekend, that's the warm-up. Yeah, we did shots before we went out for drinks. Yeah. Like, we had to get pre-drunk before we could go get drunk. Yeah. Now, most people think of four drinks as nothing on the weekend. In college age. So one of the things that we need to do as nurses is educate our patients that, you know, four drinks really is a lot. And you might be able to handle it for a while, but eventually it will catch up with you. So as far as everyday type drinking, how much is too much or considered excessive? Okay. More than seven drinks in a week period is considered high consumption, which means that you're okay if you have one a day, but if you go above one a day, then you're in the high consumption category. And that's not just for abuse purposes, but it's for the purposes of your liver and other things that alcohol affects. Now, one of the ways that we assess for alcohol abuse is through CAGE screening. CAGE stands for, have you ever felt like you should cut down on the amount of alcohol you drink? That's the C. A is, have you ever been annoyed by someone criticizing your drinking? G is, have you ever felt guilty about your drinking? And E is, have you ever had an eye-opener? Do you know what an eye-opener is? Have a hard time getting going in the morning because you have a hangover, so you take a little hair of the dog that bit you. So drink in the morning. So G is guilty. So have you ever felt like you should cut down? Have you ever been annoyed by someone criticizing your drinking? Have you ever felt guilty? Have you ever had a drink in the morning? And yes to any one of those questions indicates a need for further assessment. Then the last thing we talk about is recreational drugs. Now, why do we call them recreational? Why don't we call them illegal?
You don't want to offend any
person. Nope, it has nothing to do with feelings. Because if a person is doing morphine, that's legal. There are lots of drugs that are legal that people are not using for medical purposes. So if you ask, do you do illegal drugs? There are a lot of people who, the reason they do the drug they're doing is so they can honestly say no and feel good about it and pass their lie detector test and look you straight in the eye and not tell you a lie. So you want to ask about recreational drugs, because what we're wanting to know is, do you take a drug for any reason other than a medical purpose? So it's not just marijuana, heroin, cocaine, LSD and peyote, mescaline. We're also talking about morphine, Xanax, Valium, compressed air. Do you know that you have to be 18 to buy compressed air? Yeah. When I was 25, I got carded. I was like, I don't even look 18. So sad. All right. I want to ask about exercise. How often does a person exercise? What kind of exercise do they do? Nutrition. Now, everyone's had nutrition here, right? Okay. In your nutrition course, did they go over how to do nutritional assessments? Not at all? Okay. Nutrition is one of the most difficult things to assess because people are notoriously bad at remembering what they have eaten. Yeah. How many of you can remember what you had for breakfast yesterday? But you had to think about it. Yeah. And only half of you raised your hand. Now, maybe that was because the other half of you didn't have breakfast. I don't know. But people are notorious for forgetting what they had. How many of you at the end of the day have gone, I'm so hungry because all I had to eat today was this? And then after you think about it for a couple more minutes, you're like, oh yeah, and this, and this, and this. Oh yeah, and that. Oh, and I did have that. You know. So we tend to forget what we've eaten. So it's kind of difficult to get people to really be able to recall and tell you what they've eaten. And then because we eat on so often, it's kind of hard to just record all of that. So one of the best ways to get a nutritional assessment is to do what's called a food diary, where you have a person carry around a little book for a day or a week, and they write down everything they eat in it. One of the problems with doing a 24-hour recall, which is tell me everything you've eaten in the last 24 hours, how many of you have eaten healthy for a day? Anyone? Yeah. Most of us have eaten healthy for one day. But how many of us eat healthy every day? Yeah, it's not as much. So sometimes you just get a lucky day where you're like, yes, I look like I am awesome. When that's not how you eat on a regular basis. So nutritional assessments are very difficult. Probably the best way to do it is to do the food diary at least over a week's time.